To this extraordinary speech from his mistress, Dudu listened with great dignity, the thatch of his upper lip shoved out over the lower one, his hand curved round his ear in token of an attention not at all feigned. Being past master in a certain field, he was in a position to interpret her words. So, understanding how things stood, he changed his tune, not too abruptly, but by degrees gliding from one position to another. On the morrow he spoke differently of Joseph, yet as though his words of yesterday had been uttered in the same sense, though in fact they had been much more derogatory. And in general he sought to turn gall into honey, and all that he had previously uttered into its opposite. Such gross inconsistency must have angered any reasonable person, for it insulted the human understanding. But Dudu was instructed by his prowess in a certain field. He knew how much people in Mut Emenet's state can be made to believe, and he took no shame to himself for urging her on. And she was far too bemused to take offense at the insolence. She was even grateful to the dwarf for his complaisance. "Noble lady," he said, "if your servant appeared not yesterday before you to discuss ways and means in our affair, for the day before I was here, as you will recall when I remind you, and only your great zeal magnifies the term of my absence, the cause was but the pressing claims of my office. Yet could not even so my mind be distracted from the problem which lies next to your heart and mine, touching Osarsif, the new steward. The duties of my office are none the less dear to me, for the which you will not chide me. They are precious, and have become so by inclination, whereas at first they were a burden, as will often come to pass. For the same is true of that problem and occupation concerning which your servant is privileged to take frequent counsel with you. How could one but take that duty to his heart, which permitted him daily or almost daily to exchange speech with his mistress, whether summoned or unsummoned? It is even true and natural that my gratitude for the great privilege be extended to the subject of our discourse, so that I must needs take him to my heart who was the cause of my advancement in being the cause of your concern. It could scarcely be otherwise, and indeed I am reminded to my satisfaction that I have never thought of the subject of our discourse, the person in question, otherwise than as one worthy of your concern. It were unjust to Dudu to suppose that he has neglected for an hour the elegant duties of the wardrobe, even to be active in the business which his lady grants him to share with her. One must do the one without neglecting the other. That was always my motto, in earthly as also in heavenly things. Amun is a great god. There can be no greater. But shall one therefore neglect to worship and cherish the other gods of the land, even such as are so near to him as almost to be the same, and have named him their name, as for instance Atum Re Horakhte at On in Lower Egypt? Even when it was vouchsafed me to speak with you last time, I sought to explain, albeit clumsily and with unsuccess, that I found him a god great, wise, and mild, preeminent for such inventions as the clock and almanac, without which we were as the beasts. From my youth up, I have asked myself privily, but now aloud, if Amun, in his chapel, could find it amiss, were we to take account in our hearts of the mild and magnanimous thoughts of that majestic being with whose name he has united his own. Is not his grace Beknekons, the first prophet of one, as well as the other? When my lady shakes her loud rattle in the dance before Amun, as his bride in the feast, then her name is not Mut, as on other days, but Hathor, the sister bride of Atum Re, with disk and horns, not the bride of Amun. In the light of these things, your faithful servant has not failed to take trouble in the matter close to our hearts, but has approached nearer to the seed of Asia, that youth who flourishes so exceedingly in the house that he is now steward and the object of your concern. I have sought to search him, to the end that I might speak with more knowledge before you than was last time possible, despite all my effort. All in all, I found him charming. within the limit set by the natural order for a man like me. The feelings of the women on the roofs are different, of course, but I found that the youth would have little or no objection to letting the bowmen shoot at them, and in this respect there would be no ground at all for turning the bows in the other direction. For he seemed to say that but one had the right to look upon him and fix him with her eye, whereat he darted me a glance with his great eyes like night, at first large and shining, but then veiled and artful, in the interesting way he has. His words might have been an indication of his feeling for you, but I did not let it stop there, for I am used to weigh and estimate men according to their attitude toward you, so I led the talk round to feminine charm, and asked him, as one man another, whom he found the most beautiful of all that he knew. "Our mistress, Mut Emenet," he said, "is the most beautiful here and in all the region round. One could cross 7 mountains and not find one more full of charm." And there came an autumn redness in his cheek, which I can but compare with that which now colors yours, the source of which, I may hope, is your satisfaction over my zeal in our cause. And not stopping at that, I furthered your desire that the young steward should wait often upon you and put himself to proof before you, that you might come upon the sources of his magic and the secret of his mouth. For to that I feel myself by my nature uncalled. Urgently I pressed him and chid his timidity, counseling him to approach you, O my lady, the more assiduously the better, kissing with his mouth the ground before you, the which may suffer it. He made no reply, but the blush which had gone from his cheek swiftly returned, which I took for a sign of his fear to betray himself to you and reveal his secret. Yet I am convinced that he will follow my advice. True, he has risen above me in this house, by whatever means, and is at its head, but I am the older in years and office, so that I can speak to such a youth as a plain, forthright man, which I am, and as which I commend myself to my lady's favor. And Dudu bowed very correctly as he took leave, his stumpy little arms dangling from his shoulders. He went straight to Joseph, whom he greeted with the words, "My respects to you, mouthpiece of the house." "So, Dudu," answered Joseph, "you come to pay me your valued respects. But how is this? For only a little while since, you would not eat with me, but showed in word and deed that your friendliness was not great." "Friendliness?" repeated the husband of Jesset, tilting back his head to look into Joseph's face. "It was always greater than that of many who have behaved more like it these 7 years, while I had it but did not show it. I am a cautious, reserved man, who grants not all at once his respect and devotion to a man for the sake of his beautiful eyes, but lets it ripen in silence, even for 7 years. But let it once be mature, then is all trust and dependence to be placed upon it, as he who has been tested soon can test." "Very good," answered Joseph. "I rejoice to have won your favor, without having put myself to great charge thereby." "Charge or no," answered the mannequin, suppressing his anger, "you may at all times count on my zeal from now on, which springs above all from the fact that the gods are with you. I am a religious man, with respect for the voice of the gods, and I esteem a man's virtue according to his good fortune. The favor of the gods brings conviction. Who would be so obstinate as to oppose his own opinion in their face? So stupid and so stubborn Dudu is not, and hence am I become your man to the last gasp." "I am gratified to hear it," said Joseph, "and congratulate you on your mingled piety and wisdom, on which note I might perhaps take leave, for my affairs call me." "It is my impression," persisted Dudu, "that our young steward has not understood how to esteem my overtures, which amount to a formal offer, at quite their true worth, else you would not make to leave me without seeking to understand their extent and the advantages they hold out. For you may trust me and avail yourself of my loyalty and initiative in all your affairs, in the business of the household, as well as in reference to your personal happiness. I have thorough knowledge of the ways of the world, on which you may build. Versed am I in walking hidden ways, in spying and eavesdropping, carrying messages, and my secrecy is like nothing on earth, so subtle is it, and so inviolable. I hope that your eyes are beginning to open upon the meaning of my offers. They were never closed, Joseph assured him. You have mistaken me quite to think that I undervalue the advantages of your friendliness. Your words reassure me, said the dwarf, if not quite the tone of your voice. If my ear deceives me not, it expresses a certain reluctance, which in my eyes belongs to past time, and for which there should be no more room between you and me, since for my part I have abandoned it utterly. From you, it pains me as an injustice, for you have had as long time as I, in which your trust in me might ripen, namely 7 years. Trust for trust. But I see that I must do yet more to take you into my confidence, that you may give me yours without reserve. Know then, O Sarsif, he said, and sank his voice to a whisper, that my resolve to love you and give myself to your service utterly comes not alone from my reverence for the gods. It was the wish and the desire of an earthly person, if one very near the gods, which was, as I now confess, the decisive motive. He paused, blinking. Who, then? Joseph could not refrain from asking. You ask? Dudu replied. Good, then. With my answer, I give such proof of my confidence that you must needs return it. He stood on his tiptoes, put his hand over his mouth, and whispered, It was the mistress. The mistress? Joseph made answer, far too quickly and far too low as he bent down. It was true, alas. The dwarf had known what to say to arouse the other's immediate curiosity. Joseph's heart, that heart which Jacob, far off, believed long stilled in death, whereas here it was in Egypt, ticking away and exposed to all the perils of life, that heart stood a moment still, then, as a heart does, throbbed the faster in order to overtake its lost beats. He stood up erect again at once and commanded, Take your hand from your mouth. Speak low if you must, but take your hollowed hand away. He said this that no one might suppose him to have secrets with the dwarf. He was ready to have them, but rebelled against their outward signs. Dudu obeyed. It was Mut, our lady, he asseverated, the chief and true wife. She summoned me before her to speak of you, and addressed me thus. Steward, pardon, but so did she speak, with gracious flattery, whereas I know that you alone are steward since Montcalm's death, and occupy the special room of trust, whereas the title was and is mine in but a limited sense. Steward, said she, to come back to the youth Osarsif, about whom we have before now taken counsel together, the moment, so it seems to me, has come for you to lay aside the reserve and dignity which you have practiced toward him these past years, some 7 years, perhaps, and to lend yourself frankly to his service, for in your heart you have long yearned to do so. I have considered the misgivings which you have now and then expressed before me concerning his precipitate advancement in the house, but I have at length rejected them, on the ground of his obvious virtues. This was the easier because you yourself have gradually lost sight of your objections, and finally could no longer conceal your increasing goodwill. It is my wish that you will no longer put this constraint upon yourself, but rather serve him with fervent love and loyal heart, for this indeed is the heart's wish of your mistress. What could be dearer to her than that the best servants of the house be friendly with each other and enter into a bond for its welfare? Such a pact, Dudu, you will make with the young steward, and as the older and more experienced, give him aid and counsel, and be his messenger and guide, for it lies near to my heart. He is shrewd, and in what he does, the gods mostly grant success through him. Yet in some things is his youth a hindrance and a peril. The peril rises from his youth, that being united with great measure of beauty, the beauty of his years and growth, as well as of his swiftly veiled glance and his ripe lips. One might climb seven mountains without finding a stripling of such pleasing exterior. What I enjoin upon you is that you shall protect his person against offensive curiosity, giving him a troop of bowmen when he goes into the cities, who shall shoot their arrows to rescue him from the peril of things thrown down upon him from roofs and walls. But I have said that his youth is also a hindrance to him, for he is timorous, and I would have you extend your aid to overcome it and give him confidence. For instance, all too seldom, or almost never, does he come before me, the mistress, to speak concerning the affairs of the house. I am loath to miss it, being not like unto Petipre, my husband, who on principle takes nothing on himself. For I, as mistress, take lively interest in the economy of the household, and have ever regretted that the departed Montcalm, from too great ambition or exaggerated respect, I know not which, excluded me from those affairs. I have promised myself some improvement from the change, and appoint you, my friend, to ply between me and our young steward, subtly, as you know how, and to teach him how timidity may be overcome, that he may appear often before me for converse about this and that. This indeed you may regard as the chief aim of the pact you make with him, even as I, Mut em Enet, make one with you. For thus I bind you in allegiance to him, and in obedience to a bond between him, yourself, and me. These, concluded Dudu, were my mistress's words, in repeating which I give you intimate confidence, that you may return it. For now you can better understand the meaning of my offers, whereby I give myself blindly to your service, and am prepared to walk all sorts of secret ways for the sake of our threefold bond. Very good, Joseph answered. He forced himself to be calm, and his voice was low. I have listened to you, overseer of the wardrobe, out of respect for our mistress, whose words spoke from your mouth, as you would have me believe. Also in respect of yourself, the man of the world. For it would be unfitting for me to meet you with a coolness and polish inferior to your own. For I have not much faith in your recent conversion, taking it to be worldly wisdom instead. Sharp practice, if I may speak frankly without offense. Nor is my love for you without limits. Indeed, like my feeling for your person, it hath rather the opposite quality. But I seek to show you that I am not less man of the world than you, and equally master of my feelings, for I am capable, quite in their despite, of cold-blooded wisdom. A man like me cannot always walk the straightest path. He must not fear to take a crooked one. And such a man can use not only the honest for friends. He needs eavesdroppers and clever rogues, and must prize their services. Therefore, Master Dudu, I will not reject your offer, but readily accept your service and duty. There shall be no talk of a bond between us. Such a vow would not be to my taste, even were the mistress included in it. But what gossip you hear in house or city, that bring always to me, and I will seek to make it avail. If you but trust me, responded the little man, I care not whether you think me worldly or sincere. I need no love from the world, having it ever in my home from Jesset, my wife, and from the sons I have begotten, Esesi and Abebi. But my glorious mistress has set her heart upon this bond between you and me, and that I shall be aid and counsel to your youth, messenger and guide. To this I cling for my own part, and shall be satisfied if you will trust me. Whether with your heart or your understanding, matters not to me. Only forget not what I whispered you, of the mistress's desire to be initiated into the affairs of the household more intimately than in the time of Montcalm, and that she will often have speech with you. Have you, perhaps, a message to give me for her in return?'